Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you candy. Come on to my house, to my house. I'm gonna give you an apple and a plum and an apricot or two. Hey.
Welcome to Food for Thought. Join us for a thought-provoking glimpse into the world of the food that we savor. Meet the women and men who are growing it, foraging for it, raising it, cooking it, and who share it with the rest of us. Today's guest is Miguel Oribe. Tierra Viviente is the name of his farm, which means living earth. He's down in Paracho, Michoacán. And we're going to talk about the farm and growing corn and the people who are growing the corn, because this is an area where corn really came from. There's so much talk these days about Monsanto and GMOs and that sort of thing. Let's talk about how important it is, the people who are growing the corn down there.
Well, everybody's talking about food sovereignty. A lot of people are real concerned about seed or the invasion of GMOs, the monopolizing of seed and stuff. And we actually have some real stout people that have been doing this for a lot longer than even history can tell. And they're people that are truly undervalued. They don't have the equipment to actually produce corn in the way to make it economically viable. And yet every year, these native people go out and they plant over 35,000 hectares of their native corn because of tradition, because of culture, because of just habit, to lose money. Mm-hmm. If it goes really good for them, they'll be able to produce 2 tons to an hectare, and they're losing money. You have to produce at least 3 tons. That's why I've tried to take my expertise to go down there and create the value that's needed so that these people can make a quality of life that they deserve for the great work that they're doing for all mankind, and get their production up to 3, 4, and even 5 tons per hectare. It would change the whole value. It would change the whole system of what it is that they've done. This area is probably some of the poorest areas in Mexico as far as money, even though they're rich with seed, they're rich with land, with culture, with cuisine, even with artisans, but they just haven't really caught on to trying to express themselves and grow inside of this capitalist system. And yet they continue to preserve this wonderful germplasm for all mankind.
Yeah, I think, you know, sometimes we get so caught up in the value of the dollar. And this corn has really developed itself in this region. Tell me a little bit more about that.
Well, it's evolved along with the people. We're working on analysis of it to see what its nutritional and etheric values truly are. It's an area that's quite difficult for anything to survive except for things that have been there for a really long time and have evolved and survived throughout time. Yeah, it's food that has to do with food sovereignty. There's sovereignty there, whereas the majority of our food is developed for profit without much regard for health or nutrition. This is something that has actually evolved together with the people and has provided nutrition and livelihood for this group of people for as far back as even history can tell.
Tell me a little bit about some of the foods made with this corn.
There's a sweet corn tamal that is just absolutely great. We grind the fresh corn and then we steam it into a tamal. There's different types of tortillas that are made with the fresh corn. There's a type of an atole that's made from the fresh corn. There's type of a bread that's made from the fresh corn. And then you go into the full grain dishes, and the region is known for a tamal that's called corunda. Corunda is a tamal that's actually made from the leaf of the plant, not the corn husk. It's something that's traditional to the area. You have tamales, you have tortillas, you have atoles. Atoles are a type of a drink, a mush that's made from the corn with different flavors, different seeds are added into it. There's pinole, which is a type of dry ground corn that was used by runners for taking compact nutrition along with them on long trips. There is a type of roasted corn that you mix in, that you kind of roast it, and then you boil it a little bit, and you mix it in with squash and some molasses. Well, there's an infinite, amazes me, the evolution of the cuisine and how it is that it's come about over the years. It's something that's so intricate, so nutritious, and at the same time so well thought out, the way that it combines with the different foods, the chiles, the tomatoes, the squashes. It's one of the places, especially in, it's one of the only places in Latin America where that cuisine has evolved and serves the region very, very well.
It seems so entwined with the people, so many meals, so much part of the life. And there's like a spiritual connection with the corn as well.
The thing that I see is I was at the expo, the Natural Food Expo, and I was trying to figure out how come we don't have more Mexican products. We have lots of nutritious and good tasting stuff. But actually what happens, the tradition and the custom in Mexico is that all of a sudden there is an event that's declared, whether it's a fiesta or a wedding or whatever, and the women all come together and they hustle together. They gather up all the ingredients and they put the food together, and then everybody comes together and they have this big feast. And at best, you'll get what is called the recalentado, which is where you reheat the food the next day. But then it's done and it's gone.
It's gone, yeah.
You'll never get one of the foods in a freezer 2 weeks down the road.
Uh-huh.
Everything is all put together and then it's done.
Ah.
And so we don't have the frozen foods. We don't have the stuff that you can preserve or package or take down. We haven't figured out how to do that yet.
So how would people, if I want to taste this corn that's grown in that region, how might I get a hold of it?
Well, we can send some things up to you. We have relatives and people here that can actually prepare tortillas, tamales, atoles for you.
Uh-huh.
And we might even get into a point where we can teach people to do it so that they can actually start to savor. And I'm sure you have lots of Mexican people in this area that know how to work with that anyway.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I was wondering, now you have this seed that you've preserved in this area and it really grows at that altitude. But, you know, some communities, some cultures, they've kind of lost their seed that did well in their area. Is there a way of connecting people so that if there's a community that wants to start growing these kind of ancient varieties of seeds again, that they can do that?
Yes.
Okay. How would they do that?
Well, we're connected to, in Mexico, there is actually seed keepers. And there's the biggest collection of seed for wheat and corn in a big international institution that's down in Mexico. And there's also number of academics that have gathered up collections from all over in Mexico. So they can contact us and we can send them seed appropriate for their altitude, for their region, if they're truly interested. Yeah, contacting us. Yeah. That would be good.
So how worried are you about big companies kind of getting a hold of some of these varieties and, you know, kind of wrecking what you've got going on with your seed?
Big companies have already gotten a hold of these seeds. And Monsanto, Syngenta, Asgrow, all of their origin came from seed that came from this area. I'm more concerned about having the value established for these people that have been providing this seed for so long and maintaining this seed. I'm more concerned about being able to get the production up to 5-6 tons per hectare for these people. And I think that that's the way to preserve it. That's
okay.
The way to continue
to be successful.
To be successful,
yeah.
With it.
How do you deal with nitrogen? Because corn is a very high nitrogen feeder. How do you deal with that?
That is such a good question, because that is the challenge that we're having there right now, is to got to get that production level up. We have an excessive amount of rain that washes out, not only washes out the nutrients, but also compacts our soil. We have cold weather that locks up the whole uptake of intakes, and then we have strictly organic resolutions that we're wanting to find for all of this. We have 3 PhDs that we're working with right now on soils and agronomy to be able to work out the appropriate mixes for this area. We're looking into the analysis to make sure that we can supplement the things that the plant needs to come up with the nutrient density that we're truly after. And there's bacteria, there's different types of fungi. We make a compost on a large scale out of corn cobs and sugarcane waste with organic chicken manure and cow manure as well. We do different types of activators. We're really tied into a lot of the biology that's coming out of Cuba. And we have some really good PhDs out of the universities that are mentoring us and helping us along.
That's great. This has been so interesting learning about corn in Mexico, and I really appreciate your coming up to the studio today to talk to us about that. This is Jennifer Bell, and I've been talking with Miguel Uribe with Tierra Viviente in Mexico. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, and we cordially invite you to come down and visit us whenever you can. We're in Michoacán, and mi casa es su casa.
Gracias.
Grapes and the cakes, hey, come on to my house, come on.
If you have any questions or comments about this program, please call the listener comment line at 826-6089. You can hear this broadcast again at the KHSU website under archived programs at khsu.org. This program is also available on iTunes. Food for Thought is produced in the KHSU studios located at Humboldt State University. Our engineer is Jessica Eden, and producer is Jennifer Bell. Join us again next Friday on KHSU for another edition of Food for Thought.